Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I think what's cool about Riley, you know, is he comes to work each and every day. You know, again, and just as one of those guys who's eager to get out there, whether it be special teams, you know, just doing whatever he needs to do to help the team. You know, and I think when you see rookies come in like that, you know, I think that's very fun to see. You know, again, like him just jumping out there on a kick return, him being in, you know, if it's a run play or whatever, you know, he wants to catch the ball, he wants to block, you know, he wants to do whatever he has to do for the team. He wants to block.
Middays on the Score.
It's the voice of Allen Robinson, number one wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, who have finished up half of their preseason schedule. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show. I'm Connor. Mark Grody is in for Dan. We are live at the Try Not to Suck celebrity golf outing at the Bryn Mawr Country Club. Golf carts running all over the place. The shotgun start is at noon. Joe Madden is going to join Lawrence in his usually scheduled time, right about noon or so. The guys will have a chat about the Cubs winning their first road series in quite some time. Mark and I talked a lot about that to start the show, but Mark Grody is obviously the Bears beat reporter for WBBM, our sister station on the AM side, and you've got access that many people would pay millions of dollars to acquire, Mark. And you've told me when we sat down here at the Bryn Mawr Country Club to start our day, that you found four honest-to-God things that mattered for the Bears coming out of the preseason loss to the Giants.
Right. My goal was...
Four real things.
Yeah, my initial goal was to do a top five list of things that mattered from preseason game number two against the Giants. I couldn't find five things that I thought really mattered as it pertains to the rest of the season, so I dwindled it down to four, and I told myself it's okay, Mark. It is okay.
Yeah. Just look yourself in the mirror. You're good enough.
Yeah.
You're smart enough.
Right.
Four is a fine number.
And doggone it, people like me.
Comes right after three and right before five.
It's
a worthy number. I think it's important to be honest here that the reason you didn't have to get to five is because the Bears have told you that it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Make the list however long you want. We don't really care about these games either.
Be you. And I will start. The first play in this game that I thought really mattered was the end of the first half. Chase Daniel with a 29-yard completion to Javon Wims down the middle. Again, time winding down in that second half. They get themselves into field goal position. Chase gathers everybody along the offensive line, stops the clock by banging the ball, and then a 27-yard field goal subsequently made by Eddie Pinheiro. And the reason why it meant something is because this is a play that they work on, that they worked on in Bourbonnais, that they constantly try to get right, that, you know, time is running out. You got to get yourself in field goal position.
Right.
They pulled it off. Obviously, you hope Chase Daniel is not playing this year because that would mean that Mitchell Trubisky was hurt. But Javon Wims is going to play some this year.
Yeah.
He's going to at least be active. I don't know how big of a part of the offense he's going to be, but that was his night in general was heartening to see with the five catches and 60-some-odd yards and that particular play.
He really seems to have a former Ken Mistrolli Award winner, Javon Wims. I think the very first Ken Mistrolli Award winner, if memory serves correctly. Jay and Rick, if I've got that wrong, remind me, but I'm pretty sure Javon Wims is the first guy that won it because we had him on after he got drafted, and then he won the first one. He seems, check me if I'm wrong, Mark, but he really seems to understand the how of the wide receiver position. So many guys, when they come in that first year in the league, rookie wideouts, regardless where you get drafted, especially in your seventh round, it's hard to find the how to play that position. You got the natural ability, and you rely on what you had in college, that kind of thing. But just the little nuances, the breaks off the line, the understanding down and distance, running the routes in the right spaces. Like, he seems to really have a grasp on that, and that's what you're talking about with that play, making sure you've got the sticks, making sure you got the depth, and then coming down with that ball matters. Coming back to it matters, too.
Yeah, he knows how to use his body, too. You know, there's some big-bodied wide receivers that don't necessarily know how to use that kind of leverage. I think Javon Wims does know how to use it. And, you know, he's had a terrific preseason so far this year. But remember, he was pretty good last year in Bourbonnais as well. He was also good, really, moreover, in the preseason games. I think he, for whatever it's worth, he led all receivers in yards or receptions or something
yardage.
Like that.
I think it was yardage.
I think you're right. Probably, yeah. And he everything he's been asked to do, he has done well. He spent the season inactive mostly until that game against Minnesota. Might have been active for a couple of games. But he kind of earned a second chance with the team based on what he did last year to become a bigger part of it. So I'm anxious to see exactly how that manifests itself. We know who the key targets are going to be for this Bears team, and it's going to be the guys that were the targets last year. But it certainly is, you know, could be Javon Wims more. So that is my number one.
What's thing number two?
All right, number two. You know what? Let's go to running back and a rookie seventh round pick, Kareth White Jr.
Yes.
He had a touchdown run. That was great. But see, since it's preseason, we could talk about a play that was called back, 103-yard kick return touchdown. The reason I liked it is because he showed really good vision, which running backs typically have to have, and he showed that speed, man.
He got the fifth year fast.
Oh, he should be in the fastest man competition on the Cubs
He'd be in that one, too.
Right. No, he'd win that, hands down. But, yeah, I mean, right now it's Taylor Gabriel and Tariq Cohen. I think that
he's in that class.
He's in that class, and it was like I don't know if he's going to make the team. I don't know what role he would play necessarily, but I think that he showed what he can be in that game.
Well, so that's the thing about White. Like, I would like to see whether or not, like, if you could go into the Bears room, the war room, you know, where they've got the depth charts on the massive whiteboard walls that Matt Nagy works on. I'd love to see where he's at, Kareth White is, in terms of teams work. You know, whether not just as a returner, but if they think he's got ability and capability, I guess probably a better word, on some of the outside gunner spots or what have you. You look at the way the roster may break down in the 53. They invested capital in him. They spent the draft pick. They don't have a lot of those this next season. They certainly didn't have a lot of them this season. They trade them away as often as they can to move up and get their guy.
Yes.
That means that the next guy you get and the guy after that also has to be your guy. So Kareth White, by virtue of that math alone, ought to be more valuable to them than Ryan Nall is.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, too, I think you're right, but Ryan Nall has been nothing but good, too, when he's had opportunities.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I was kind of, you know, taking a shot at Ryan Nall's performance.
And
I don't mean to.
He's easy, too. I mean, but he's been, like, anytime he is in, he has performed well. So it's an interesting battle at the back of that running back's room. So we'll see how that plays out. And something to watch. Like, if people are looking for things to watch for in the preseason games, and we all are beyond if the first stringers play, that's certainly one to keep an eye on.
What's thing three?
Thing three, let's go back to wide receiver and Riley Ridley getting his first playing time of the preseason. And I think he had three catches for 19 yards. And the interesting part about this is that early in the game, Chase Daniel took a shot with Riley Ridley down the sidelines, a deep ball. If it had been completed, about a 25 or 30 yard, and just a little bit off, I asked Chase Daniel about the play after the game, and he said we were just a tick off as far as the timing is concerned. But I just think that he kind of changed that entire wide receivers room on draft day when he was taken in the fourth round, because it wasn't necessarily a position of need. It was the classic best player available, like, oh, Riley Ridley is there, so let's go get that guy. He's got some catching up to do because he was injured with a hamstring injury, but I do think that early in this regular season, Riley Ridley could be a real part of things. Like, just watching him, the way he moves, the way he comes in and out of his cuts, the way he works with the quarterback, Chase Daniel for the most part, and some with Mitchell Trubisky, has been really good to see, and as advertised, quite frankly.
I'm glad to hear you say it, because as I look through the roster and stuff, both with him and David Montgomery, obviously two different degrees, because Montgomery will likely be a starting running back, if not week one, then two or three or something like that, because they've invested the way they have, and they seem to trust him with the way they've talked about him. I keep on reminding myself to just, okay, they were the best guys available at those spots, but that's still a third and a fifth round pick.
Yes.
You know, I mean, those still are guys that waited as long as they did to get there. And I think some Bears fans, and this is just totally normal. It's not a Bears fan thing. It's everybody. You get hyped for the draft picks you make because they're your guys. And
sure.
You know, you understand all the
guilty,
all the investment. But I, count me up. I was a Kevin White guy until like the very end of
Why
it.
Why not?
Until his leg actually fell off. I was still there for Kevin White. Like I think with those two, understanding not so much limitations, but just what the ceiling for their rookie seasons could be will be important. That offense has to work, obviously, to different degrees with Montgomery and Ridley. It has to also work without them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you also need to have players in that this offense can work around without them having to be there.
Especially Riley Ridley. I think that you're depending on David Montgomery a little bit more for the regular season, but you're right. I mean, everything, no matter what we're talking about in the preseason, it all changes on game one. That's the night you're going to see Allen Robinson targeted a ton. Yeah. You're going to see Taylor Gabriel targeted. Obviously, Tariq Cohen's going to be a huge part of what's going on. Trey Burton, the same thing. Like, all of a sudden, like, we talk about bread and butter. That's the bread and butter. That's why, I do think Riley Ridley will contribute, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he's inactive for a couple of games throughout this season, just to get him assimilated and get him ready and get him caught up. And, you know, in this offense, if you are one who catches the football, you have to learn every single position, what everybody is doing out there. Ridley's a really smart guy, but he's still got to catch up.
Is he working at both wide receiver positions, both outside spots, or is he just learning the X right now?
I've seen him in both, but mostly the X spot.
Okay, all right, fair enough. What's things four?
All right, thing four is, and keep in mind, I was putting this list together before the news came out that Elliott Fry had been waived from the Bears team, but yes, kicker. Kicker was the other thing that meant something. I don't know that Eddie Pinheiro, I think it's possible that Eddie Pinheiro clinched the kicking competition in that preseason game with his 2-for-2 performance, you know, but I think he actually, I said this earlier, I think he actually won the competition at Soldier Field when he was 12-for-12 in that practice. But yes, the kicking competition means something, and that's another thing that, you know, it looks like it's going to be Eddie Pinheiro alone.
Maybe.
In the next two, at least the next preseason game, it's
going
to be his gig. So that'll be something to continue to watch for. But whether you want it or not, the kickers is something that continues to be very real.
So I think Eddie Pinheiro won the kicking competition, but there is no reason for the Bears to not have another kicking competition.
I agree.
Like they have to allow themselves that possibility. They didn't do that when Cody Parkey was sticking uprights with footballs all season long, especially in the last 6 weeks. They did not want to start a second competition or any competition there. They have to rid themselves of that practice, that you have to give competition to Pinheiro if you feel like you can offer it to him.
Bears have lived up to their word in that, and I know that nobody cared about this. It was all meaningless sound based on what happened last year with Cody Parkey, but what Ryan Pace had said right from the beginning, or back even during the combine, I think it was, when we talked to him, was we are going to exhaust every single possibility to find, to be obsessed with getting the right kicker for this team. And we all laughed about it and mocked the 8 or 9 kickers that were in OTAs. And I get it.
Oh, there was much mocking.
I get it. It was mockable. But that was part of doing exhausting every possibility, bringing in Jamie Cole to be a kicking consultant to help out the Bears special teams coach Chris Tabor, and just having this a group of people working round the clock to get it right. It seems like they narrowed it down to the two right guys, because both Elliott Fry and Eddie Pinheiro have been very good. And if I had to decide which one of those two won the kicking competition, it would have been Pinheiro. So it looks to me the rough draft is that they're getting it right so far.
Will you guys get access to Jamie, as Bears beat reporters, will you guys get access to Jamie Cole, you figure, before the season starts?
I don't think so. Like, I feel like we would have already if that was going to happen. I mean, it's not completely out of the question, but
I wondered if there's going to be like a one-off, or you're going to get to catch him in a hallway, or maybe like a preseason sit-down and special kind of thing.
Maybe, but I'm going to say no. If I got to say yes or no, I think that they like Chris Tabor to be the voice of that special teams room without diluting
sense.
It or complicating it. So,
I don't mean to say that they should put him out in front. I wondered at it, because he is, you know, such a I mean, that's a presence. You know, that's an admission of something in this offseason that they needed to get better at, and he's the embodiment of how they think they can do it.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, we still don't know exactly, like, how it works, like what Jamie Cole is doing, or if he's sitting in the room with them and looking at the film, or if he's actually sitting down working with the player. We don't really know. It's a little bit of a mystery as to what he does. But, I mean, by definition, he is a kicking consultant. Is that what he does? But I think that they are very comfortable having Tabor be the spokesperson for all.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a football nerd or that you just live and breathe it, just a procedure Q&A with him would be interesting to Bears fans, I would imagine. Like, go through, just do your day-to-day, man. Just take me from the minute you wake up to the minute you're done.
Yeah.
I think people eat that up.
I think I may have blown it, though, Connor, because I was lucky enough to stay in the dorms during Bourbonnais and Olivet Nazarene, and guess who lived right next door to me?
You had Jamie Cole.
Jamie
right
Cole
there.
Lived right next door to me, and I never
scare
saw
him off.
That should I might have, or maybe they upgraded him and they left his name on the door anyway. Mm. It's very possible, but I never saw him. That means that he was working hard.
I don't think it was you. I don't think it was the fact that you're a bad dorm mate. People don't say that about you, as far as you know. We are at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. It's Joe Madden's charity golf event at the Bryn Mawr Country Club. Second year that the Bernstein and McKnight Show had the privilege of being out here broadcasting. Ron Coomer is here. We will be joined by the man and the myth and the legend in just a couple. Coom's coming up in a few on 670 The Score.
Strope ready for the 0-2 pitch to Cabrera. Here it comes. Swing and a miss. Strike three and the ball game is over. And the Cubs have beaten the Pirates and won the series 2 out of 3. Their first road series win in 3 months.
What?
They actually did it. They won a road series, and the celebration is on at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. It's Joe Madden's charity golf outing, and the Score is very pleased to be broadcasting from the Bryn Mawr Country Club for another year. The second for the Bernstein and McKnight Show. It was a joy last season, mostly because we got to talk to Coom and JD, and this time we get to do it at the same time. Coom and JD from the radio and television broadcast, respectively. Mark Grody's in for Dan, by the way.
They need to shoot a little higher, JD.
It's like what we can get, you know? I mean, that's the way it works.
Well, Lawrence is going to have Joe on, the master of ceremonies, in just a little bit, so you don't want to go anywhere. He's going to show up around noon or so, but we figured you guys would be great to start with. I want to start here. Coom, you guys had the broadcast in Williamsport just last night. Cool venue, awesome views. The kids seem so, so into it, and the players actually seem pretty into having all the little leaguers there too.
It's a great event for Major League Baseball, first of all. You have to look at it as you're building the brand of Major League Baseball, and that is it. That's the direct marketing, are those kids that are going to one day, hopefully, some of them be big league ball players and play, and that's the cool part. I really feel like when you watch the overall interaction of the players and the guys that were interacting with the kids, and then the team and the managers allowing their players to kind of go and do what they wanted and go through the stands. You know, I don't think it could have turned out any better than it did. I know for the Cubs guys, Rizzo and KB and Javi and Darvish, they were really into what was going on, and I just thought the night turned out great as far as that aspect goes. In Williamsport, yeah.
The product on the field was very good last night as well, a 7-1 win over the Pirates. And Jim Deshays, Jose Quintana, yet another strong performance. He goes 7 shutout, allows 5 hits, strikes out 7, walked exactly nobody. I thought early on in this run for him, he obviously was the beneficiary of a lot of run support, but especially in the last 2 games, he's really starting to, dare I say, dominate.
It's the anatomy of a winning streak, right? You pitch pretty well, you get run support, you win games, and then you get locked in, you pitch a bunch of shutdown baseball, and you win games just almost by yourself. He's in that kind of a run right now where he's the guy you really look forward to seeing going out there, because he's capable of giving you a shutdown performance like he did last night. The baseball being baseball, it's not going to last forever, but let's ride the wave.
Pair of analysts here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Ron Coomer and Jim Deshays joining us. Mark Grody is in for Dan. For both of you, the Cubs were very vocal this offseason about how this was going to be a year where it was production over pedigree, that it was going to matter what you did on the field. They have made yet another move, adjusting a former full-time player, Aldair Mora Jr., goes down. Addison Russell is back up. I wonder, you know, for both of you, the telling aspects, what matters most to you when you see that roster move made, and any expectations for Almora? I mean, is he a guy that you could see them coming back to at some point in the next few weeks?
Yeah, well, they're definitely going to come back to Almora. He can play defense, and, you know, and the Cubs are going to need that spot. You know, it was the offensive side. The Cubs have been struggling. It's no surprise or no secret on offense. Yeah. And so when you're looking for that offense and guys aren't swinging well, you keep rotating the lineup to see what's going to work and who's going to get hot. And Albert, you know, didn't. And he lost playing time, and then eventually the stroke started deteriorating from, you know, he's still a really young guy. So that's very common when you don't play every day. So, you know, they had to make a move, you know, and two things happened. One, you know, you saw you get a little exposed at the shortstop position if Javi was unable to play.
No doubt.
That's one thing. And the second thing was Addison Russell was hitting almost 340 in the minor leagues for 15 games, and we know he's a good defender. So the bottom line is you're playing the hot hand of who's swinging the bat when you're not, you know, when you're not swinging well as a group or scoring runs. And that's just the old, that's been around baseball forever. The guys that hit usually play, and that's what's going on right now with the Cubs.
And of course, the trade for Castellanos, obviously a bunch of at-bats disappear in the outfield there. So, I think the other thing, you know, Albert, first-round draft pick, got to the big leagues at a young age, had success at a young age. And I think sometimes it's difficult for that player to buy in to let's try something different. Let's make some tweaks. Sometimes a demotion can be a little jarring for a young player. Maybe that's the point where all of a sudden the player goes, well, maybe I do need to take a good long look in the mirror and come up with some kind of a change in my approach. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, right away. You know, you don't do that. That's more of an off-season project, you know, reworking the swing a little bit. But I think that would be on the agenda for Albert this winter.
And a lot of our young guys haven't dealt with any failure yet. And now you get to the big leagues and now everybody's really good. And, you know, sometimes you get a little overmatched, and I think that's happened to some of our young guys.
The home runs were great last night. That Oppo rope out of the park by Hayward. Rizzo goes deep. Yeah, Nick Castellanos with a home run. But Coombe, I think the moment that maybe I appreciated most was in the fourth inning, and I know Joe Maddon loved this too, that little two-run single by Kyle Schwarber, kind of a semi-shift beater, putting the bat on the ball, and just a simple single to drive in a couple of runs, something that Joe Maddon stresses, that you can drive in runs without putting the ball over the wall.
Right. You know, scoring runs with base hits and scoring runs with outs are huge, and that's what wins games in October, because we know how difficult it is to score runs off the elite pitching come October in playoff baseball. And with all the shifting that goes on, I think the one thing Cubs really miss is Zoe. You know, he was able to maneuver the ball around the field during his at-bats, and he really exploited the defense. Kyle did that yesterday, and it's fun to watch. It's, you know, he took two big swings. He chased a high fastball and just didn't quite catch up, and then gets the ball away and just kind of, you know, I said kind of just looked like a little league game of pepper where he just peppered one short. The spot is vacated, and the Cubs scored two runs, and that really was a big play.
JD, for you, what's going to be the couple of things you watch Joe Maddon do as he maneuvers guys that get healthy back into the bullpen? Obviously, this Craig Kimbrell has the ninth, and I suppose Brandon Kintzler fits in there somewhere late as well, Steve Cishek too. But, you know, do you figure he gives jobs to guys? Is this going to be more matchup more than anything else?
excuse me. Clearly, Kyle Ryan, you know, over the course of the season has seen his profile elevate, where I think Joe trusts him late game situations, depending on the matchup. You know, I don't think he sees him strictly as a left-handed matchup guy. He gets righties out with that sinker, cutter, curve combination. You know, I think he's what Joe is pining for is to have kind of a traditional look in the bullpen where you can hand the ball to Kimbrell in the ninth, feel very comfortable with that, and then depending on who the workload leading into a specific game, maybe one night it's Kintzler, maybe another night it's Cishek, and depending on how things go with Pedro Strop, maybe he works his way back in there into the high leverage situations. It's been a tough go for all those guys due to the injuries. I think they wanted to give Strop and Kintzler a little softer landing as they came off the injured list, put them in less high leverage situations or low leverage situations, and kind of let them build up. They didn't have the luxury to do that because of the nature of the games that we've played and the fact that we had guys banged up.
As far as the starters, sorry, Connor. As far as the starters are concerned, Connor, I love that we were able to talk about this earlier, that if there is a one-game playoff or a playoff series, who is your first guy to start? Like Connor said Yu Darvish. I said Kyle Hendricks. I love that we're able to put Yu Darvish into this conversation. And we're talking about right now, today. Things can change, but who would your guy be?
Rich Nye. He just drove by in a golf cart.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going Rich Nye. For me, the question is, who are you playing? If it's the Dodgers, I'm going to probably start one of my lefties. I'm going to start Hamels, or I'm going to start John Lester. A lot depends on how guys are throwing down the stretch. I mean, we've seen it with starters. Everybody deals with the guys run hot and cold. That matters a little bit, I think. But I think the matchup matters more. And you're right. The fact that Darvish is in that conversation now is huge because, stuff-wise, he's probably still the guy most capable of going out there and giving you that shutdown game. It's hard to look away from John Lester with his resume. It's hard to turn away from Cole Hamels. I mean, they've been in so many big moments and performed so well. Kyle Hendricks, same thing with Hendricks.
Yeah.
We always tend to overlook Kyle. I guess my point would be I don't know. It depends on who the matchup is.
It's hard.
And it's good to have options.
Well, for me, I was just kind of remarking about this when we were setting our way too early playoff rotation about an hour and a half ago. It kind of sucks that for the Cubs, a strength of theirs that not a lot of teams have is five solid starters. Yet when they get into a playoff series, one of those guys won't start. Because you're going to shorten that kind of thing. So a strength now becomes just a little bit less so. And I find the way they're going to maneuver that fascinating to me.
Well, I think last year you saw that Boston made a major change in the way teams look at how you use your pitching staff. It's not just starters and relievers. I think Alex Cora kind of opened Pandora's box a little bit by saying, you're not going to throw a bullpen. You're going to pitch. You're going to be in the game, and it's the World Series, so we need our best arms out there. And I don't know if Joe Maddon and the Cubs will do that, but that has been opened up. And I, when you look at the success they had last year, it was pretty good. So, there's some other options out there that I think people are thinking about. And that may come into play as if you're playing in October.
Pretty important stretch, Coom, coming up for the Cubs here. I guess everything is an important stretch at this point. But they host San Francisco starting tomorrow night. Then Washington is here. Then at the Mets. And then home from Milwaukee. All of a sudden, Washington and the Mets, they are two teams that I didn't think were going to be in the picture, suddenly are very much in the picture. How critical is this particular stretch for the Cubs?
Well, I think it comes back to JD and I've talked many times about pitching. And when you look at the New York Mets, to me, were off the radar screen. And they just didn't, they had guys hurt. They had guys complaining about, who's getting what contract at the beginning, and they get off to a rough start. But, JD, when you run those pitchers out there that they have in rotation, you're formidable every night. And then all of a sudden you get a little offense, and now next thing you know, you run off a 10-gamer, 15 games. You win 14 out of 15, and you're right back in it.
Yeah, Mets are dangerous in a short series, whether it's a regular season or a postseason series. Same with the Nationals when you can line up Scherzer, Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin, top three guys in their rotation. Very tough to beat. This is a tough stretch. It's good. It's a good news in that the Cubs are going to be home for the most part over the next couple of weeks, so they can take advantage of Wrigley Field and how well they've played there. But by no means is it going to be easy. Earlier in the year, we thought Davey Martinez and Mickey Callaway might be out of jobs.
Right.
Now they might get a lot of votes for Manager of the Year the way they've been able to turn things around.
How about out before we let you guys go and get out to the tees? Outfield defense for you fellas over the last few weeks, obviously with Almora going out. Things change some. The mix changes. I think Jason Hayward has done, at least from my mind, a better job than I thought he would in center field, and that's obviously credit to Hayward being the athlete that he is. Things look okay to you and probably to Joe's eyes out there?
They do to me. Yeah. Castellanos came here, and the scouting report was not good about his defense.
No.
I've not seen that. I have not seen any of that. He's done a very adequate job defensively. He hasn't had to make spectacular. He's made all the routine. He's made the difficult play. But to me, he's done a fine job. And, Jason's one of those players that wherever you put him on a baseball field, he's that good athlete where he's going to figure it out. I think people get on him about his center field play. Well, when you only play a position in the major leagues once a month, it's not going to show your abilities to do it. Now that he's playing out there and getting familiar, he'll be just fine in center field.
Yeah, the advanced metrics don't like Castellanos. But remember, he played in Comerica, big, big ballpark. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those advanced metrics penalize guys that play in big ballparks. The eye test, I think he's been fine so far. Mm-hmm. I'm not an outfield guy. I can't speak with any expertise on that. Same thing with Hayward. He grades out very well in right field, not quite as well in center field. But like Coombs said, hasn't played out there as much. And the bottom line is they needed offense. So I think you're willing to sacrifice defense for offense at that point. And that's why Almora comes back into the picture in September. That's why you see Hap late in games with his athleticism in the outfield. So you play, you know, you're an offense first team for six innings. You get the lead. Then you put your quote-unquote hands team out there and try to close it out.
Who's a better golfer, Ron Coomer or Jim DeChase?
Coombs, not even close.
Really?
Yeah.
I know you're both good.
Yeah.
I know you guys.
That was real quick.
Yeah, he's second best in his own house.
Yeah, Paula. This is true. Yeah. That's true.
But well, Paula can hit him.
Can really play, yeah.
But he's clearly way above.
I just played more golf when we both retired than he did. I lived on a golf course. Yeah, we have a lot of fun playing out on the road. We can hack and slash around a golf course with the best of them. That's
looks like you guys have a great time today at Joe Madden's Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the event. It's a good cause out here. Well done. Thanks
for coming by. Thanks, boys.
See you guys. Good to see you, Connor. Great to see you, Mark.
I know.
Haven't seen you in a while.
I'm getting emotional here right now.
I'll
sign off so you guys can have your man hugs. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. That was Ron Coomer and Jim DeShays. Joe Madden's coming up with Lawrence at the top of the hour. Lawrence is coming up with us in just a few. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show on 670 The Score. Been an awesome day out here at Joe Madden's Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. Talked with a lot of cool people, enjoyed our time, and Mark Grody was in for Dan Bernstein. I got to tell you, it wasn't the best part of the show, but it was pretty damn great. Thanks for coming out, Mark.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. I love events like this where anything can happen. Anybody can stop by the table, and it has been a blast. Thanks for having me in here, Connor. We know you have a choice in these situations. Thank you.
I always make it you. That's Mark Grody. Our thank yous, and it's a whole list of them. I should let you know, just a peek behind the curtain here, Jay Zawoski, our producer, handed the thank you list to me. It is extensive, and it is on the back of what looks like a takeout lid.
Yeah, you know those
foil containers where you crimp the sides around the white and cardboard takeout lid?
I never get it right.
So he hands me the lid, and I'm like, what is on the back? It was like spaghetti and meatball or like a garlic something.
See,
and
if you knew me, you know I never have leftovers.
That's what I figured. Yeah. I mean, you got to watch leftovers and you don't even have to have them. That's
it's what keeps the Bic pencils sturdy in the bag.
That's what this makes.
Always prepared me.
All right. So our thank yous go out to James Vauders, Bears linebacker, who won the Ken Mastroli, Rich Campbell, Bears beat reporter, Gary Matthews, Bob Dunier, Pete Lecoq, Ron Coomer, Jim DeShays, our producers, Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, and Brian Gertz, Tyler Birchmeyer, and Greg Rinaldi, with all the promotions team out here at Joe Madden's Golf Tournament. Rich Wyatt was our producer. Rick Vaughn and Jerry Lasky were two guys who helped get all the luminaries to the desk here and onto your airwaves. We had a great day. Lawrence is coming up tomorrow. Hub will be in for Dan. We'll have Joe Sheehan, and of course, we'll check in on any Bears developments and whether or not they brought in any more kickers to compete with Eddie Pinheiro.
I'll be in House Hall if you need me.
Could be anybody. Yeah. We'll call Grote and see what's up. Lawrence is coming up. Joe Madden's coming up at noon. Don't go anywhere. 670 The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.